Welcome to the Digital Leaders Podcast, Season 3. Today's guest is Karen Alexander. Karen is Director of Digital Services at Enterprise Shared Services, Department of Finance and Personnel in Northern Ireland, where she's held that role since January 2014. Her responsibilities include leading the Northern Ireland Digital Transformation Programme and the Northern Ireland Open Data Agenda. She was Digital Leaders Local Champion for Northern Ireland in 2016, and since then, she's been one of the Digital Leaders 100 judges. Hello, Karen. Great to have you on the Digital Leaders Podcast.
Hi, Robin. Great to be here.
So, before we find out a bit more about you, can you tell me about your current role?
Yes, I'm Director of Digital Shared Services for the Northern Ireland Civil Service, and that covers many things from strategy and policy delivery through to operational service delivery, and that would be across the areas of information assurance, information technology and information management. I suppose the biggest aspects of my job are running central government IT shared services, and that is about providing services to all departments, many arm's length bodies, and also the wider public sector. Also, I'm responsible in this role for driving the Northern Ireland Citizen-Facing Digital Transformation Programme, which is something I'm very, very passionate about. And that includes NI Direct Citizen Portal and the Citizen Contact Centre services. So that really is what I do at this moment in time.
So that's an incredibly broad remit, both in-house and externally, sort of client-facing or citizen-facing, and also working with your colleagues. But at the same time, Northern Ireland is quite small compared to, say, England or even Scotland. So does it work because of that size, that they sort of, the size of the organization means people know each other, people have history with each other, and that the community is sort of manageable?
Definitely the size of Northern Ireland has its advantages. I always say we're small but perfectly formed little part of the island. And we are, I guess, the size that we are lends itself to collaborating in a better way, makes it easier because it is a small place and we do know a lot of people. So my peer group stretches far and wide across the province, and it's a lot easier to get a more collaborative approach and people to basically share and do things together as opposed to in silos. So yes, it is an advantage.
We've had a podcast with Mark Owens in Season 3, and I immediately know you'll say, yes, I know Mark, based on what you've just said about everybody knowing everybody. Yeah. But he was very positive about the way in which the citizen sees government and understands the benefits of digital. So he's looking in from the outside, I guess, as a tech business. Do you see that at the sort of customer connection level?
Yes, what I would say is that I think a lot of the services and a lot of the things that we've done, certainly in central government, citizens do notice what we're doing. They're very appreciative of that. And they're a very demanding community. And as the days go by, they get more demanding. Their expectations are rising. And we recognize that we have to keep responding to the new demands out there. Now, government can't do these things alone. You mentioned Mark Owens. Mark is one of a number of companies that we need to work with, because we can't in central government do these things on our own. And we need to partner with the private sector to deliver the best possible outcome that we can for citizens here.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. Tell us a little bit about NI Direct, because for those of us who don't spend all our time in the province, we won't know what that is.
NI Direct is, I guess, it's all encompassing. Some people would say it's an omni-channel delivery vehicle, but essentially it is two big things. It's nidirect.gov.uk, which is the Northern Ireland equivalent of gov.uk. And it gets between 25 million and 30 million visits a year. And when you put that into context, we only have 1.8 million citizens in Northern Ireland. So it has a huge public footprint here in terms of citizen engagement. The other aspect of NI Direct is around contact center services. And again, that plays an absolutely instrumental role in delivering on our digital agenda, because people are being assisted through journeys utilizing that contact center service. So we do still need to take calls from the public, and that's the single place that you go to in Northern Ireland, for certainly for the majority of government, well, all of government departments and the most of the sort of arm length bodies. So it's a sort of a single space where you can conduct business with government, and that's what NI Direct is. It's your one-stop shop, for want of a better word.
That sounds like a great product, and that must generate a lot of incredibly valuable data. So how good are you sort of across government in then utilizing that data? Are the challenges to, is data sharing sort of baked into the mentality across the civil service now?
I would love to say, Robin, that we had it cracked and that we knew all the data that we had across government systems and services and through NI Direct or whatever other route and source of information that we have in government. Government are not particularly good at sharing things. They share when they have to. And that isn't always when you need to share information. Sharing information is many times about making sure that you have your hands on all the right information to make the right decisions. And we're not particularly good at that, but we're trying. We're trying hard to be much more visible and transparent about our information. Certainly on an open data level, we're striving to become very transparent in terms of pushing information out into the public domain. But within organizations and where there's sensitivities with information, we still have a lot of regulations which are barriers to actually pure true information sharing and cutting down the duplication and all of those things that come along with holding information about anything. So I guess if you were looking at the sort of the panacea where we want to get to, you want to get to a space where we're holding information and we're only holding it once. We know exactly what we have and we know the value of that. And we're using that for analytics and all of the things that make sense that are going to influence policies, direction policies and direction of service delivery. So we haven't got it right yet. We're moving along on that journey. And it's a very difficult one, so it's not to be underestimated. This is not a simple thing to resolve. We're doing our best.
Absolutely. We really like to get to know our guests on the Digital Leaders podcast. So could you tell me about your journey? You could go back as far as you like, but your journey, early inspirations, the things that have led you to your current role.
So I am going back some time here, Robin, but I'm going to bring you along on my journey. I had a very traditional route into this profession. I was one of the very first students to sit at computer science A-level, and that was way back in 1976, I believe. And I went on then to complete an HND in computer studies, and I had all that sussed out because there was a number of things were going to happen, but I wanted to do the least time possible through a study route to get myself a decent job, and the HND actually met that criteria. So I started the NICS as an assistant programmer, as it happens. I graduated, I got married, and I started my first job in the industry all within a three-month period. From then, I worked for a series of very good IT professionals in the civil service who really took me under their wing, I have to say, and developed me. And that did enable me to move through the professional grades fairly quickly. And I loved working in technology, and I eventually reached the lofty heights of head of IT. And I carried out that role in a number of different NICS departments over a number of years. But it became clear to me at some point on that journey that my technical label, my professional IT label, was holding me back in terms of progression within a very traditional civil service. And I'm grateful actually that I was given some opportunities to prove myself in other areas. And in particular, I took on responsibility for something, a program of work, which was absolutely failing. It was way over budget. It was in the public eye. It was under sort of press and media scrutiny. And it was a big major change program. And I took that role on to get this thing back on the rails and to deliver an operational service. And I'm very grateful that one or two people actually did put their faith in me, and that actually helped me to deliver. It could have been a turning point in my career, the fact that I took it on, because it could have been career ending. It was such a big thing, and predecessors had failed to deliver on it. But actually, I got there and I did do it, and that was a tremendous thing for me, a great achievement. And it actually gave me the confidence then to push myself forward. And really, as I say, that's a pivotal point in my career. And as I say, the rest is history, because I had never looked back from that point, and I just took control of my own destiny as much as I could from then on, and kept stepping forward.
That's a great sort of backstory. So obviously an early pioneer of the whole sort of computer education. So I imagine you were the... Were you at a mixed school or a girls' school, to be sitting at that A level?
Well, strangely, I was at an all girls grammar school, but because I wanted to do computer science, and my school didn't offer it. So thankfully, there was two people in my school that wanted to do it, and we were bussed down to the local technical college in Belfast city centre, and we were there with pupils from other grammar schools in the city and surrounding area, and I'm fairly certain we were the first group to go through that process. I mean, that's obviously changed a lot now. I mean, computer science and, you know, the sort of the variations of that are now offered in GCSE, A level, whatever. We're still not doing well in terms of encouraging our students to actually go down those routes, but that's another story in itself. But I was as I say, it was an arrangement that was set up specifically to move it forward.
And the opportunity, the sort of really tough project that you took on, was there something about that project where if it had been a less difficult project, you might not have been sort of able to get that job? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Right. There's a number of things here. So first of all, there's nothing I like more than a challenge. I mean, if you throw me a challenge down, I just will do my utmost to get that done. And I saw this as a big challenge. Secondly, it wasn't pure IT. So IT was part of the problem, but this was a huge change management program of work. And the biggest issues were not around the technology. It was around the organization that were being, as they thought, this was being done to. So they had huge problems. They also had huge problems with the supplier in the mix, who the reputation of the supplier was basically going down the tubes, because the organization, you know, were apportioning blame, possibly in the wrong area. But I would say it was in the wrong way. But there was loads of things about it that I thought, actually, I think that I could work with this, and I also, it'll give me an opportunity to actually show that I'm not just a pure technical person, and that I have other skills in my toolbox that I can use. I mean, I had led large technical organizations. I mean, I'd run business, you know, large technical businesses, big contracts, whatever, but I had never had sort of the opportunity to really work on the bigger, the wider issues around change management. And that's the reason why I chose to do this. There was no ulterior motive other than I wanted something different. It was a challenge, and I actually thought that it would be beneficial to me.
Take some, particularly as you say, it could have been career ending if it didn't work out. But I guess if you know you can do something, then it's very hard not to have a go at doing it. I really like that story of kind of the change in your career in the moment where you realized, I guess, how, you know, your full set of capabilities. So now I'm sure our listener wants to know as well, what are you working on right now? What's the challenge that you're stuck into at the moment?
Well, I'm sure you've sort of got it that I'm very passionate about doing things differently, in particular in relation to citizen-facing services. And I mean, all about doing them better, doing them more simply, making them more efficient, and really working towards a strategy with that vision of a digital government and a digital society. So against that backdrop, the exciting work that I'm involved in right now relates to how government engages with the public in a personal way. So trying to be a much more a friendly face of government and being more inclusive and just more personal, not as really, you know, an obstacle, government seen as an obstacle that you can't really get through their doors or windows or to their people or whatever. So trying to get that much more personal aspect of engagement with public. So the project in particular that I'm very excited about is called My Direct. And that's the what we call the personal part of nidirect.gov.uk, which is obviously our government portal, our citizen government portal. So My Direct is a secure area where we provide somewhere for citizens to access their documentation, for example, their licenses, their letters, their certificates, etc., anything that they get from a government source, a secure area where they can see their personal details, what we know and hold on you as a citizen, as a person, and you can make changes to your personal details. And when you make those changes, you're going to know that you only have to do it once, and that the machine of government will take care of sharing that information where it needs to be shared. So that is something that is out to market at the minute. We've been working a long time on this because we want to get it right. It's something that we really, really need to get right. It's an area where the citizen really needs to authenticate themselves. So we need to know who they are, and they need to be able to trust us. So they need to know that their area, their secure area, is only for them to see and no one else. So we really want to get this right, and we want to build the trust with citizens. Another little thing on the engagement piece as well that we have been working on, we actually do have a live service, but it's a journey. It's a service in development, let's call it. It's called MyNI, and this is our area. It's really using the power of social media, neuroscience techniques, to change citizens' behaviours, and it's a really exciting space to be in. So what we do is we run campaigns where we target specific groups, and the campaign really targets that group in a way that it makes them take an action. It already encourages them to take an action. And by taking that action, it potentially leads to a change in their behaviour. For example, we're using this very successfully to improve citizen recycling habits and aiming it at maybe younger target groups and target groups where we think or we know from, you know, looking at data sources that actually they're not great in terms of the whole recycling of waste. So there's huge benefits of utilising this service, and individual departments are using it really, really successfully. We've been working with the Department of Agriculture, Environment and Rural Affairs, also the Department of Health, where there are a number of other departments that want to get involved. But the biggest benefits from this service is really when those agencies and those departments start working together and do what we would consider to be a multi-agency campaign. And in doing that, we will drive much bigger outcomes. So that's really the direction of travel from now on. It's a hard service to describe. Unless you see it and see how it operates, it's very difficult to visualize. But it is a service. It's online. It's called MyNI. And it's something that actually I think there is going to be amazing potential in. And we're going to see so many shifts in citizen behavior just through utilising this particular service.
So as you say, without seeing it, it's quite hard to understand. But are you effectively taking issues to where the citizen is? So you sort of finding them on Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram, and yes, sort of say you're going to them and saying...
Yes, so yes, that's exactly. NI Direct, for example, it's a space where citizens come to us, if you want to describe it like that. So NI Direct, it's a big portal. People come to us and they get information or they transact with government. MyNI, we go to the citizen. So utilizing exactly what you said, targeting through Facebook, through Twitter, Instagram, through whatever social environment that we think is appropriate for that channel or that particular campaign. We target groups, and we target in a way that we push something out that will grab their attention. So we try and grab their attention, and we try to give within, by grabbing their attention, they click on something. So they're either going to go and view a video, they're going to click on a link which takes them somewhere which tries to encourage them to download something or to do something. Did you know that you can go here, and we'll take them where they need to be taken to maybe manage their pain relief, for example. If we're trying to get people to manage pain relief and reduce the reliance on GPs and consultants, we'll work to see what it is that we need to push out to try and change a behaviour around that, because you don't always have to go into a doctor's surgery to get something resolved. There are other ways to do that. So really this is about working out what it is, what behaviour we want to change, and how would we go about that. And then how do we monitor the change? And we have been able to actually measure the change in behaviour. It's quite bizarre. So it does work.
When you go out to the citizen, do you go out openly as government, or do you go out through third-party, non-profit or interest groups? So at what point do they realise they're talking to the government when they think they're having a conversation about their home waste?
They're always aware that it's a government web presence. However, so that there's no secret around this. This is very clearly, this is about government engaging, trying to engage with you. So that's no secret at all. It's very clear. We don't hide that. The brand is MyANI, but it's very clearly linked to government services. However, there is a slight difference, because we don't only link to government services, we also link to other things of interest that are not necessarily anything to do with government. So, for example, I'm just plucking this one out of the air. Actually, it's not necessarily one we've been running. I'm just thinking of somebody who's coming into Northern Ireland who's not sure about, you know, what our services and what we offer, and they maybe want to operate an electric vehicle, for example. So MyANI, it's a way that we could push out a lot of information to a certain groups of people who want to actually do something much more sustainable. So through the Department of, let's say, the Environment and our infrastructure, we could potentially be promoting something that will actually encourage people to really adopt a different lifestyle in terms of transport. And in doing that, we would be signposting them to places that will give them, places where they can buy one of these vehicles, nothing to do with government, places where they could potentially be insured for these vehicles. As I say, this is only an example, and I'm just trying to imagine something that isn't typical of government. We haven't actually done this one, by the way. This is a campaign that is just, I guess it's there, and it's one that could be done. The actual involvement of third parties, of other companies, of other organizations, whether they be charity, voluntary, private, it's actually irrelevant. It's actually really utilizing the opportunity to really educate people around something, and again, try and change their behavior.
So it's societal issues, and societal issues can't be solved by government alone. It's done through partnership and private, non-profit and others. Okay. Exactly. No, really like that. So wish you all success with the rollout of MyANI. I'm sure our listener probably knows of other examples. Or is it a first for the UK? Oh,
it appears to be the only government type of social web presence, which is what we call it. It's a social web platform. We're not aware of anything similar in the rest of the UK, or even slightly further into Europe. But that's not to say something doesn't exist. We're just not aware of it. I don't believe it. It is anywhere within UK government. Northern Ireland are definitely leading the way on this one.
Brilliant. Fantastic. So you are obviously, Karen, from what you've told us, a digital leader. From your experience, and I guess particularly from the Northern Ireland experience, what is the state of digital leaders? To what extent do leaders understand the digital world in Northern Ireland?
The digital leadership and leading digital things, transformations and digital, it's different. So digital leadership is different, I believe. And the reason why, and I'm saying that it's different from driving forward big IT things or, you know, big replacement programs or things like that. It is different because this is about change. Digital leadership is very clearly about change. It's about people, it's about culture, and it's about behavior. And the trick of a digital leader is getting key stakeholders to work with you. And that is really critical that the business takes ownership as well. So it's critical that they work with the leader. And it's critical that the business understands that they need to take ownership. Technology is a big part of solutions when we deliver better citizen services. But getting people to change how they do things, question why they're doing things in the way that they do them, and showing them a value in taking a different approach, that actually takes really strong leadership to drive that from within the business areas. I mean, there's a statement around, people will say, why should we change this? It works. You know, there's nothing wrong with our processes. It's working perfectly well. We don't want to replace anything or change how we do things. And really, this is about promoting the benefits of taking a different approach and moving away from traditional sort of big IT replacement projects. And really getting, if you get the buy-in within business areas that their whole service end to end can be delivered in a better way, then you can get away from that traditional IT replacement to getting involved in projects which are end to end, that are iterative in terms of delivery, and again, designing those services around the people that are going to use them and not around the policies and processes that we have in government, which that's a very, very difficult thing to get a lot of people away from. And it's important, again, to involve the right people in the process and people that you can empower to take decisions. So being a leader, you really have to know the people within your organization, the ones that you can trust to move things forward, the ones who have a passion and a real interest in delivering change, and you need to get them involved and really getting their hands dirty. So you really need strong leadership to do that. Those staff, for example, need to be equipped with new digital skills, because even at the leadership level, skills are not, there's things that you need to know which are slightly different from maybe the business that you've been involved in and the service that you've been doing for years. Actually, you need some new tools in your kit to start really working with your organization and driving down a different type of message and a direction of travel. So we need to equip our staff with the new digital skills. I mean, Agile, it's been on the go now 5 or 6 years, probably maybe slightly longer. But I mean, that's something that really, if you're taking that approach to delivering new services, the people that you're working with and the people involved in that service delivery need to be informed about Agile. You can't just plop them into a team, a project team, and tell them to go and do their best. They need to be equipped to do that. So it's our duty to train and develop and to put the mechanisms in place to do that. And then the other thing I would say about, something that will actually drive the change, and something that's another, I guess, is another tool in a leader's box, is showcase what success looks like and use people and service areas and organizations that you know that have done this and can tell stories. And that's, tell stories about the benefits, about the success, about the change, about just about every aspect of the journey. And that's a really great way to get people to buy in.
I have absolutely nothing to add to that, Karen. That is a fantastic exposition of digital leadership. It really was. So I look forward to you listening back to your own your answer to that question, because literally nothing to add to that. I couldn't agree with more with all of it. So we are nearly out of time. So let's, which is a great shame, let's finish on our quick fire round of three questions where hopefully your answers will help our listener kind of get to know you even more. So our first question is, what one book would I recommend to our listener and why?
I belong to a book club, so I have had the privilege of reading numerous books that I would never have chosen over the last 15 years. I am a good reader. I love a good read. So I recently read a book called The Silent Patient by Alex Michaelides. I probably have pronounced that wrong, but if you type in The Silent Patient, you'll get it. And you know what? That book just hit all the right buttons for me. It had so many twists and turns, and I love a good thriller, and it really was a good thriller, and I would highly recommend it.
Brilliant. And our second question, what one person would you like to have lunch with, living or dead, and why?
I had a problem actually picking one, but I'm going to pick this one, and I would love to have lunch with this sadly deceased person, and it would be Prince. He was an incredible artist, and he had immense talent, and he reinvented himself on a regular basis. And do you know what? That's a lesson for us all, and spot on in respect of transformation. And I only thought about that when I was thinking about, you know, who I would love to have lunch with, and about the synergy there. I thought it was quite interesting. So it would have been great to know his plans for the future, and I would just have the greatest chat with him.
And yes, and a sad loss. He definitely left us too early. And the one thing that our listener would be surprised to learn about you is?
Well, for several years, until about 2017, I played saxophone and sang with a band called the Elderly Brothers. This band is a bunch of middle-aged men and one very middle-aged woman who just like to practice a lot and play charity gigs. So we still do the odd charity gig, and you never know, we may be coming to a venue near you at some point.
Fantastic. That sounds like a lot of fun. Okay, so sadly, Karen, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being on the Digital Leaders Podcast.
Thank you, Robin.
That is it for this episode of the Digital Leaders Podcast. Now, of course, we would love to know your thoughts. Tag us at DigiLeaders and let us know. And if you want to find out more about today's guest, head on over to our website, digileaders.com/podcast, and we have all that information there. That is it for this week. I'm your host, Robin Knowles. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Digital Leaders Podcast.